This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Athletic Baseball Show presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. Derek Van Riper here with Keith Law. It's Friday, July 2nd. On this episode, we'll discuss teams that could make the playoffs, but probably won't based on mathematical odds. One's a little more of a coin flip, and we'll get to them momentarily. Futures game rosters have been released. We'll talk about some players we're excited to see, but also some players that we wish were included as a part of those rosters. And the College World Series wrapped up this week, so we'll talk about Mississippi State winning the first team sport title in the school's history. So a lot going on there, including a disappointing showing from Kumar Rocker in the decisive Game 3 of that series. But Keith, let's start with some of these teams that have a very important July in front of them. And I want to start today with the Angels, where there was some news that just came down that Dylan Bundy is headed to the bullpen, which is just a massive reversal from where he was in the shortened season. I don't think you or I expected him to be the same guy that he was in 2020 over 180 innings this season, but I also don't think either of us expected him to be so bad as a starter that a bullpen role was going to be the necessary adjustment for this team to make.
Yeah, I was particularly surprised, pleasantly surprised, when Bundy, one, stayed healthy for all of last season, which obviously had been an issue for him forever. For folks who don't know, he was one of the best, I think he's one of the best high school pitching prospects ever. He's certainly one of the, let's say, three best I've ever seen, but he was worked mercilessly in high school. I mean, you could not find a better contemporary example of a pitcher who was just worked so hard in high school that I think you can draw a pretty straight line from that to him getting injured. I don't think he was in pro ball for 2 years before he first blew out. And it wasn't just elbow. It's been shoulder and back to the elbow. I mean, he has just never been healthy. And then all those surgeries meant he lost his fastball. It was a guy who was consistently hitting 97 when I saw him in high school. And now it's a lot of 90-91. But he really showed us something last year that he could pitch with that reduced velocity and be effective. He could throw a lot of strikes. He showed ability to work more with his off-speed pitches. He could get around the fact that the fastball was, it went from, you know, what was a strength to sort of a weakness. And I agree with you. I don't think I expected him to be a top five pitcher in the American League again, which I think he was last year statistically, or at least close to it. But I thought he'd be no worse than an average starter for the Angels, and God, do they need that. So I don't know what the – I'd be curious to know what their thinking is here. Do they think they're going to send him to the bullpen for a little while and see if he gets it back, it being the formula that he used last year? Or are they just thinking, yeah, this isn't happening? We caught lightning in a bottle once with Bundy, and that's great, but it's – you know, we're going to have to go find another starter solution, which is pretty much what the Angels do every year.
Yeah, and a lot has gone wrong for this team this season. Mike Trout on the IL right now. He's not coming back until sometime after the All-Star break. The earliest date he's eligible to come back is July 17th. You know, Joe Adell has been mashing at AAA, still striking out a lot. More recently, he has cut that K rate down a bit, so maybe they decide to bring him up, add him to the offensive mix. But they're basically chasing a wild card. They're two games below 500 as we sit here Thursday afternoon and break them down. A 10.6% chance of making the playoffs, according to Fangraphs. 8.5 back of Houston, 8 back of Oakland. Even if you start to close that gap, where do you upgrade this team, and how do you do it given some of the limitations they have with the current build of their system? They have to give up a near major league ready player to get an impact player back, be that an Adell or a Brandon Marsh. But I just don't know if they really know what they even want to do with this roster.
And the problem is, other than Shohei Ohtani, who got bombed last night before we're recording this at least, their next best, among their other starters, their other four starters, actually five starters who've made at least 9 starts for them this year, the next best ERA is Griffin Canning at 4.95. So essentially, they don't have a starter with an ERA below 5. And that's not one. That's not going to get you to the playoffs. But to your point, what do you do? You could go get, they're not going to, but hypothetically, if they could just go get Jacob deGrom, right? Well, healthy Jacob deGrom. That's still not fixing this club. Makes them better. Okay, great. Then you still have three guys in your rotation with five ERAs. And four if Ohtani, for whatever reason, I mean, it's Ohtani's been tremendous this season, but let's not pretend he has some history of durability here, too. If he has to miss a couple of starts, it's going to surprise exactly nobody. So I don't know what you do. You need multiple starters, and you can't just do that on the fly. You can't do that in the middle of the season. That I think is the impossible task for them. They needed Bundy to be like the Bundy of last year. They needed better from Canning. They needed one of Heaney, Alex Cobb, Jose Quintana to, I mean, I actually like Heaney, but he's just been too homer prone. They needed at least one of those guys to be a league average guy this year. You know, in case of Cobb and Quintana, a bounce back maybe, but nothing went right. I mean, it's what you said earlier. Just nothing went right. They took some educated gambles, and I don't think any of those has paid off this year.
I think so much of what's happening in Anaheim is similar to what has happened in Philadelphia. Year over year, this is a team with high expectations, one that's willing to spend money, one that has a few good core players in place, but just doesn't have the secondary support on the roster to get all the way into the postseason. A Trout, Ohtani, Anthony Rendon trio is a group to build around and win now with. You really can't tear this down. You're stuck in this place where you have to try and spend your way through your flaws, and that might be a level of spending that they're unwilling to commit to. So I have a hard time seeing this team making the playoffs this season, but I also have a hard time seeing them make the playoffs in 2022, barring a massive shift in the way they're going about things. Let's talk about the Cardinals for a moment. They're in a similar situation, 40-41 entering play on Thursday, 8 back of the Brewers. Their playoff odds are even lower than the Angels right now, 4.1% according to FanGraphs, which is weird. Yeah, this is the thing. They're like the Yankees of the NL, Keith, because their past success always elevates the expectations, and I think it skews the perception of how good we think they are sometimes. But if you are a fan of any other team in the NL Central, you are aware of the Cardinals' devil magic, and you would aggressively defend that it exists, because you've seen this before. You've seen this movie so many times where the Cardinals, mid-season or even in August, look like they're just not that good, and then suddenly, there they are, knocking on the door, either winning the division or getting into the postseason with a wild card. But things have gone wrong here, too. The biggest thing, I think, for me is that the Jack Flaherty injury is one they really could not afford to take. They were thin in the rotation to begin the season. We're not going to see him until sometime after the All-Star break, but their problems do run quite a bit deeper. I mean, Carlos Martinez has been worse than expected. Kwang-Young Kim looks more like a back-end guy than a mid-rotation sort of guy. I'd also say that we have to wonder, are we at the point of Paul Goldschmidt's career where he's just a two-ish win player? Like, that's a reality that they weren't ready to face quite yet either. It's a pretty interesting list of problems they have, and I'm not sure how they get out of this position either.
Yeah, you could add to that the fact that they've got basically two effective relievers at this point, 2.5. Genesis Cabrera's been fine. Not great, but fine. Yeah, I don't know how you get around that. They're in better shape than the Angels in a couple of different ways. Not the least of which is that I think the Cardinals have a much better farm system and they're better prepared to make trades from it, and they will make trades from it. I mean, this is a club that has been kind of in pretty consistent win-now mode, it seems like, for a decade or so, and they just keep rolling it forward, probably because they draft and develop extremely well. And they've done well on the international front, too. And just in terms of talent acquisition and talent development, they have a tremendous track record recently. So they've been able to backfill when things have gone wrong, whether it's promoting their own players or trading Carson Kelly at the head of a package to go get a Paul Goldschmidt. So they've had that ability, and there's still talent coming, but I don't know that any of it is coming soon enough to make a huge difference here. Nolan Gorman, Matt Liberatore, who we're going to see in the Futures game, we'll talk about that later in the show. Ivan Herrera is not far off. But are these guys going to come up and make any kind of impact for them this year? No, I really don't think so. And they have a couple of holes that they probably do need to fill. And with Flaherty, especially Flaherty, you talked about we're not going to see him until after the All-Star break. Then the question becomes, what do we get out of him? How much does he pitch and how well does he pitch? So if you're the Cardinals, you've lost your ace. How do you – well, you don't replace him necessarily, but can you supplement? Can you find a 2-3 type starter just so that you don't fall too much farther behind? That's not easy to do. Now, they are a better position to do something like that than the Angels are. And I think acquiring that one starter makes more of a difference to the Cardinals' playoff odds than acquiring one starter like that would make to the Angels' playoff odds. So I do think they're in a better position overall. But yeah, you're to your point, you're right. There have just been enough disappointments here. This is not a bad club at all, but they've been outscored by 40-something runs this year. Their Pythagorean record's 36-45. If anything, they've actually been lucky, which – I'm sure a lot of Cardinals fans don't feel that way right now, given what's gone wrong for them. But it's actually a sign that if they don't do something to upgrade the roster, it might actually be worse from here on out.
The way you look at this team, it sounds like you still expect them to be viable contenders next year. They can make a few tweaks, and maybe they're not going all in with rentals at the deadline. Maybe they're looking at things that make this team better in 2022 and 2023, not giving up on this year by any means, but also trying to fix longer term flaws, because it's, you know, what better time than now? Like, you're good enough to possibly get hot and get back into the mix. And even if you don't, you've done the work taking that first step towards being a playoff team next season.
Yes. And they have, I think they have a better core to the roster to set them up for next season, as well as the guys I just mentioned, those three prospects who are, okay, those guys aren't going to come up and help them win this year, but they are going to come up and help them in the pretty near future and allow them, you know, part of the Cardinals' success too is because they've had typically had a lot of contributions from players who are making less money, that they have the room to go out and get a Goldschmidt and they have the room to go out and get an Arenado. And so they have that flexibility to run. I mean, they're kind of right in that midpoint between, are they really a large market team? Well, technically, no. Major League Baseball actually classifies them as a small market team. But they act a little bit like a large market team. And part of why they're able to do that is because their system has been so productive. And I think it will continue to be productive. And I happen to think Dylan Carlson's going to be a star. And I think he's the guy on that roster, on that lineup in particular, who you end up building around. And I think they found another pretty useful piece. Not a star, but a guy they'll be able to get quite a bit of value out of, regardless of what position he plays long term, in Edmundo Sosa. So they've got a couple of pretty solid pieces there / coming to supplement these veterans that they have. It's not that hard for me to see them, say, making one major acquisition this offseason, and suddenly we're talking about them being close to a 90-win team again. I thought they were a 90-win team this year, but a couple of things have gone wrong. And you know, even with the luck in terms of them just winning more games than their run differential would indicate, they are they're still underperforming relative to my expectations. And I think it's down to a couple of very specific players. You mentioned Carlos Martinez. Paul DeJong's been an absolute zero at this point. They've gotten very little out of right field so far. There's a couple of spots where we thought they were going to get more, and they haven't, and they got to patch at least. I would say probably try to patch two of those holes if they're trying to get into the playoffs this year. That's how I'd approach it, thinking that finding additional offensive and out of an outfield corner is relatively easy to do, much, much easier than fixing a problem in the rotation.
Yeah, definitely agree with you there. And I think we could see Dylan Carlson take another step forward in the second half of the season. Basically, it would just be unlocking some more power in games. That would go a really long way towards helping this offense. Wouldn't be a big surprise. I think the key here is also Goldschmidt. I have a hard time talking myself into Goldschmidt getting back to being the guy that he was 2 or 3 years ago. I think what we saw in the shortened season, that's a possibility. I think what we saw in his first season in St. Louis, that's still, like, what could he bounce back to, if that's the question? 2019 is sort of your best case scenario, less the rabbit ball, right? I mean, you got to factor in the difference in the ball. So maybe he's a mid-20s home run guy if things start to go well again. I think the encouraging thing for me with Goldschmidt, the K rate is still down compared to where it was 2 years ago. I don't want to write him off completely, but I also don't want to expect him to be top five first baseman Paul Goldschmidt the rest of the way either. So definitely some interesting series on the horizon for the Cardinals. The Yankees are in this same bucket too. Their chances of making the playoffs are a bit higher than you might expect based on the dialogue around the team. 41.3% chance of making the playoffs, according to Fangraphs, entering Thursday. 8.5 games behind Boston in the AL East. We talked about the Yankees in late April when the sky first started to fall in the Bronx. And I remember telling you I thought it was ridiculous because this happens a lot with the Yankees. They start a little slower than expected. The offense clicks in. Everything falls into place. And they're right there either atop the AL East or definitely in the mix for a playoff spot come September. But there's a few things that haven't turned around the way I would have expected. Gleyber Torres is weirdly unproductive. The power has been gone since the end of 2019. Didn't see it in the shortened season. Haven't seen it so far in 2021. How surprised are you by this? Because I think with Gleyber, he's not a good defensive shortstop. But how much could that possibly impact him as a hitter, given the ceiling he appeared to flash for us just 2 years ago?
It's not even just he's only got 3 home runs. I never thought he was going to be a huge home run hitter. He actually had exceeded my expectations. I was a big Gleyber fan when he was a prospect. He was 18 when I first saw him. He actually came through here in Wilmington. I just couldn't believe how advanced the bat was, the whole approach for that age. But he's not even hitting for doubles power. There's just nothing there. He's a singles hitter and not even a particularly good singles hitter right now. And that, to me, is... that's the bigger mystery. If you said Gleyber's going to settle back in as a 12 to 15 home run guy, even a 10 home run guy, okay, sure. But I thought he would do enough of everything else that wouldn't really matter. I thought this guy's still going to be a star. He's going to hit for high averages. He's going to have lots of doubles. He's going to play competent or maybe better than competent defense at short. And he's kind of doing none of those things. And, you know, I don't know. Is it just since the big injury? Has he, you know, he hasn't been the same since then? Is that it? I don't even know if that's entirely accurate, if it's more coincidental. I actually don't know what the guy we've seen the last, I don't know how you'd characterize this, 112 games between last year and this year. How about that? I was going to say year and a half, and I'm going to just start. That's technically not true. It's actually the last 12 months, right? But it's the last, all of last season plus half of this season. This is just nothing like the guy we saw the 2 years before. Like, he hit 38 home runs in 2019. I had to look that up.
He hit a lot of them against the Orioles.
Oh, yeah, he did. Like 16 of them or something absurd, right? This is dead. I'm sitting in front of Baseball Reference. This is something we can look up. I do have the internet. But yeah, still. Okay, so that's still 20-odd home runs against all the major league teams that year. Where could that have possibly gone? We've seen guys who we think should have power but don't hit for power, and then they need to unlock it with a swing change. Whether it's somebody like Vlad, who kind of did it on his own, or these, you know, more designed swing changes like all these Dodgers guys, the Chris Taylors, the Max Muncys, who become average, above average regulars, even stars after swing optimization or launch angle optimization. But we don't usually see guys go backwards like that unless there's some other injury. And in Torres, Gleyber's case, I don't think that's true.
Doesn't seem like it's a health-related problem that is slowing him down at this point. A lot of things have gone right. I mean, a few things have gone right. Aaron Judge looks like typical Aaron Judge. Gary Sanchez has been good Gary Sanchez for the better part of the last month now, so his season numbers have started to come together. DJ LeMahieu is the other guy that, even if you didn't believe in the power we were seeing last year especially, to see this much of a drop is a big surprise. A 273, 347, 377 line. I don't get it. I mean, he fits the park perfectly. He still hits the ball hard, hits the ball to all fields. Is this much of a power outage actually the reality of DJ LeMahieu going forward? Or do you think it's just a bad first half that maybe offsets what we had been seeing previously?
Gleyber hit 13 home runs against the Orioles out of the 38 in 2019. So we were close. To your question on LeMahieu, it was so strange because he didn't really hit for that power in Colorado, where guys usually do hit for that power. And he comes to New York, and I'm not sure anybody took as much advantage of Yankee Stadium, particularly that short porch in right field, as LeMahieu did. It was like he'd figured out if he can just hit hard line drives in that direction, which he did do. You know, obviously he does that. That's the one thing he does well, is he makes a lot of hard contact. He'd kind of take advantage of the park and get quite a few extra home runs that way. And I think he did that more than anybody, even more than Brett Gardner, who's a guy I always thought is the exemplar of somebody who was, I mean, you could say he was the right fit for that particular ballpark, right? It's nothing against the player. The ballpark is what it is. So it's interesting to see that LeMahieu is suddenly not doing that. He's not hitting the ball hard in that direction anywhere near as often as he did last year. I don't know if that's just a small sample thing. He's mostly hitting the ball as hard as he did last year. And he's striking out more than he did last year, but he's not striking out a lot. He's still basically DJ LeMahieu, but the balls he's putting into play, particularly any his extra base hit, he's just not doing it as much in that direction. He does still have 5 of his 7 home runs out to right field, but it's just in total, he's not hitting as many balls out that way. And I don't know what that is. He is 32. At some point, that does start to slip. You lose a little hand strength. You lose a little bat speed. I don't know if that's actually happening to him at this point, but he's at the age where if you start to see a power drop off, you're not that surprised.
Yeah. So I would say Torres and LeMahieu from an offensive standpoint are the two names that just sort of jump off the page relative to the expectations. And on the pitching side, Jameson Taillon, leaving Pittsburgh and going to Yankee Stadium, going NL to AL, going into that ballpark, given some of the ways that that park boosts up power. Like, you expect some bumps along the way, but I certainly didn't see a 5.43 ERA coming from Taillon in his first 15 starts as a Yankee. What do you think his second half is going to look like?
Yeah, I've just been a Taillon fan for a long time and thought maybe just getting him out of Pittsburgh, where, look, they tried a lot of things in Pittsburgh with pitchers and with hitters, and they took a lot of criticism for it, but they were willing to try. They believed these philosophies were going to pay off in the end, and the fact is, ultimately, they didn't. I think it's what, you know, essentially, more than anything, took down Neil Huntington's regime there, was just a lot of what they were trying to do on the player development side. I mean, that's draft, international player development, the minors and the majors, the whole program just wasn't producing players. A lot of talent was coming in. And I think you particularly saw guys go to other markets, the Austin Meadows and the Tyler Glasnows in particular. Garrett Cole, slightly different story. That situation's a little sticky too. So we just, you know, maybe it's its own category, but still, I saw Taillon get traded and thought, oh, maybe he'll be another one of those guys. Maybe he will leave and be able to get, you know, find an extra gear, get something more out of his talent, because he does. He's a big kid with a great arm, and it's a powerful slider. I was going to say it's a plus slider. I wouldn't say it's always a plus slider so much as it's just a very hard slider. There's a lot of power to his breaking stuff. He has, I think the biggest thing for him is he's really never found a good, consistent off-speed pitch of a curveball, a splitter. I think he'd be such a good splitter candidate. I don't know if he's ever tried one. I've never asked him or any of his organizations, but given his size and his arm speed, that he's just never had feel for that changeup. And I think that's always been kind of a problem for him. And it's why he gives up a lot of home runs on his fastball. That's ultimately, you know, hitters are clearly able to pick up the fastball too much. And that is, I think, his ultimate downfall. Because otherwise, if you look at the rest of his stat line, if you just put a finger over the home run total, you'd say, well, this guy's not bad, right? He's, you know, maybe league average starter. And it's funny to say this about a guy who's had as many injuries as he has, but he sure as heck looks like he should be a horse. So, okay, where is the production? It's, you know, he throws strikes. He does miss enough bats. He's going to give up a little more contact than you like, but it's that weakness on the fastball. And lefties do get to him, which you'd expect. Oh, God, lefties are counted for 9 of the 14 home runs he's given up so far. So it goes to what I said. It's that lack of another pitch. And it's funny to say this. Taillon's not even 30 yet. You could certainly try something new, but whatever it is, I thought maybe getting out of Pittsburgh, they'd find that possible solution. His whole approach to the solution, meaning to the missing, in his case, a fourth pitch, because he has a slider and a curveball, but the pitch to get lefties out, but also to keep righties from sitting too much on his fastball. And I don't know if the Yankees have tried something different with him, but he has never pitched with feel and with finesse and with command. It has always been power. Prototypical Texas high school arm. Throw hard, and if that doesn't work, throw harder. maybe the splitter is the solution for him. Maybe it's something else, but he needs something that looks more like the fastball coming out of his hand to keep hitters, mostly left-handed hitters, but also right-handed hitters, from sitting on it as often as they do. Because if he just brought the home run total down, we wouldn't even be talking about him. He'd be an unremarkable mid-rotation pitcher for the Yankees.
Yeah, and that would work better than what he's been to this point. Now, mm-hmm. the projections point to a low to mid fours ERA the rest of the way with a pretty good whip, like a 120s, mid 120s, high 120s whip. That's closer to a league average guy. Yeah, I mean, it's just avoiding those free passes would go a long way, and I would expect the home run rate to come down a bit because the difference between previous Taillon and current Taillon, it's greater than just the move into Yankee Stadium so far. So I wouldn't be surprised if that comes down a bit in the second half. If you had to make the call right now, are the Yankees a playoff team this season?
Oof. What playoff odds? Can I cheat? What playoff odds do they have? I know you looked this up. That's why I'm asking.
I mean, you're at 41.3%.
Are they really? My God. They're only two games ahead of the Angels, and their playoff odds are that good?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
But it's because the projections love the track record of so many of their players.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my gut says no. That division is really tough. They're in fourth place. And it's not that they've been awful, but Red Sox have been unbelievable. Tampa Bay's, they are who we thought they were. And Toronto has been mashing lately. And I love the fact that the Blue Jays, I know it was a minor move, small trade with the Marlins, though, great. The sooner you get out there, the more time those new players have to help you. By all means, be aggressive and get out there. And I absolutely think the Blue Jays are going to do something else. It might be to add more pitching. I mean, it's the problem is everybody's looking for pitching, always. But especially now. They might not need to get anyone, but if they get one more guy, I feel like the Blue Jays, I'd feel even more confident saying the Blue Jays are going to finish ahead of the Yankees. But even now, I would say that. That'll be my prediction, that the Blue Jays finish ahead of the Yankees. And that just mathematically would mean that the Yankees aren't making the playoffs.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it played out that way because that division is more balanced and more difficult than we expected it to be coming into the season.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Keith, the Futures game rosters were released this week, and it's weird to me that this is going to be a 7-inning game again, by the way. Like, why not play a full 9? Like, let's get more at-bats and innings out there.
I will tell you, you know, if you talk to Major League Baseball people, they say the biggest concern was running out of pitchers. Okay.
Just add more.
We have lots of pitchers. And they don't all have to pitch.
Yeah,
that's my biggest thing, is that this becomes a little bit of a little league. Everybody got to play. You know, my stepdaughter's played softball this spring, and everybody's got to play, and everybody's got their certain numbers of at-bats. They're in the single digits, right? These are grown men. If a prospect gets invited to the Futures game and he doesn't appear, I'm sorry, but that's how this used to work. That's how the All-Star game used to work. I would much rather do that, even if you bring a couple of guys who are kind of fringe prospects, but you bring 13 pitchers so that you know you're covered. I would much rather see the opportunity to get, whether it's more at-bats for the hitters who are already in or to add two or three more hitters to the lineup so that we do get looks at a few more of these guys.
Putting my logistical gripe aside, this is another good crop of players playing in the game this year, and it's an opportunity for many of us to see Jason Dominguez for the very first time.
Myself included.
It's weird. He's like the headliner here, even though we have guys who have been in the minors for a few years, guys who are much closer to the big leagues, because I just watched Ferris Bueller's Day Off in the background yesterday. Dominguez is like the Ferrari in Cameron's dad's garage. the Yankees haven't put him out there yet. Like, let's just see what he can do. I think you and I talked about him very beginning of the season. Why not give him that low A assignment from the jump? If you think this guy is going to be fast to the big leagues, why hold him back the way they have to this point in the season?
Yeah, first of all, to your point about Dominguez being the headliner, I agree he is one of the headliners. I had nothing against the kid. He was on my top 100 too, but man, he shouldn't be the headliner in this game. Just given who else is in the game, right? A lot of these guys are going to be in the majors in the second half. We could see Adley Rutschman later this year. We could. Well, C.J. Abrams just had a leg injury. I haven't seen the latest on him. But in theory, we've been talking about C.J. Abrams since April. Remember, we talked about him when Fernando Tatis looked like he'd be hurt for a while. So there are a lot of guys in this game. Bobby Witt Jr., speculated the other day, maybe he, out of the futures game, do the Royals say, you're not going back to Double A, you're going to Omaha, you're going to Triple A, because I think there's a pretty good chance they will call him up in September. They think he's the future of the franchise. If that's what you think, I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying that that's the organization's belief. By all means, get this guy to the big leagues as quick as possible. And that's true. And, you know, back to Dominguez, you know, they have been extremely cautious with him, which I do not disagree with. This guy did not have a pro at bat coming into this year. I am fine starting him in what I am calling the Florida Man League. Because, you know, right, they took away the Gulf Coast. It's not the Gulf Coast League anymore. It's the Florida Complex League. I'm not calling it that. I'm sorry. It's bad enough you took away my Carolina League. I draw the line here. This is like anybody who plays in that league is now automatically Florida Man. So it's the Florida Man League. I hope Dominguez's stay there is short. If he's what you say he is, he's way too good for that league. You meaning the Yankees. And let's see him against better competition. Let's see him in front of some fans. Yeah. Hopefully he just mashes there for a couple of weeks. I mean, he's played 3 games there so far. So hopefully he just rakes there for a couple of weeks and they give him, I don't know, a good 6 weeks or so in Tampa, which doesn't have a ton of fans. So I bet they will, though. I bet people down there will go just to see this kid play. And so they play in, I would argue, the best stadium in with the old Florida State League. Yeah, I would really like to see that guy out playing better competition in front of actual fans. If he's anywhere near as advanced, he's certainly physically advanced, right? The question was he baseball advanced? Let's go. And he could start the year next year at low A too, but the way that, because they got rid of the short season leagues, we've talked about that. It's just a really short-sighted decision by Major League Baseball. But now your next opportunity to get this kid playing under lights and in real games with anyone in the stands is low A, full season low A, and hopefully that's the goal for him by the end of the summer.
There's just such a wide range of prospects in terms of where these guys are at in their development showing up for this game. And Pedro Leon, who the Astros sent to Double A to start the season, he's played professionally in Cuba. He's 23 already, and the initial results at Double A are not great, but this is a guy who's knocking off even more rust than the typical minor leaguer, given the extended layoff from when he stopped playing in Cuba until this season. So I think getting a chance to see him in this environment is also going to be really intriguing.
Yes. He was one of the guys I was most interested in seeing at some point this year. You know, unfortunately, not unfortunately just for me, because this is all about me, obviously. But him playing in Corpus Christi and me barely flying this year just because of the pandemic. Well, I could fly now, but that's just made it a little bit more complicated. So that'll be my first look at him. Because he was supposed to have the tools of a top 10 kind of pick in the draft. But we hadn't seen him. As you said, we had not seen him play. I think he played a season and a half in the Serie Nacional in Cuba. A total of 65 games. Nothing after the very beginning of 2019. So he probably went more than 2 full calendar years between at-bats in actual games against live pitching. And so I wrote in my futures game right up too. He started something like 1-for-21 with 11 strikeouts. And since then, he's been better. He's been really good in June. He's missed the last couple of games, but he has been much closer to the player he was supposed to be. And, you know, I think we got to remember this week with Yoelki Cespedes also, who's in the game, who's a Cuban defector and who also had some time off there. Do not underestimate the difficulty of returning to facing competitive pitching after a 2-year layoff or even longer, as we've seen with some other guys in the past. And some guys never quite get around it. A lot of other guys do make that adjustment. I think Leon is making that adjustment. We'll see if Cespedes can too.
Who else on these rosters are you excited to see in this game.
Yeah, they're really good. For folks who subscribe to The Athletic, I did a whole sort of roundup of the interesting parts of the roster and also some guys I thought were snubbed who should have been there. But more than half of the 50 players on these rosters, 27 out of 50, were on my preseason top 100. And then there were three more guys who were on my just missed list, like Cade Cavalli, who's the Nationals' best prospect, who would be on the top 100 now. If I redid the list right now, he would be on it. I mentioned Bobby Witt Jr. I'm really excited to see him. The last time I saw him was in an Arizona Instructional League game a couple of years ago, and I've really never seen him face particularly good competition. Leon, you mentioned, that's a guy I've really wanted to see. Nick Prado remade his swing at the alternate site, and the Royals told me about this, and they were really excited. We think he's a different player. This is much more the guy we thought we were getting, maybe even more so, because we think he's unlocked power, and he has 100% shown that so far in the minors. So it's not even about, in that particular case, about seeing what he is. It is, hey, what does it look like now? Because it's working. It is absolutely working. I also mentioned Andre Jackson, who was a converted guy out of University of Utah and had had some injuries. He's kind of older for a prospect with a limited resume, but he's been really good in AA to start this year. And with Josiah Gray getting hurt, I don't know when Gray was their top pitching prospect coming into the year. I don't know when we're going to see him again. It is not out of the question that Jackson could come up and take on some kind of bullpen role for the Dodgers later in the season, as they've liked to do, just because he's a little older. They've liked to try to break in whoever their next great arm is. They like to try to slip those guys in somewhere late in the season, almost to give them a quick trial. I would really like to see what he looks like in person. So another guy I've just heard about for a couple of years, and those converted guys too, when it does work, sometimes it just takes longer, but it sounds like he's made a lot of progress as a complete pitcher as opposed to a former position player with a great arm.
Just looking at these rosters and some omissions, thinking about what that might mean in terms of big league plans, you wrote up Jaron Duran among the list of snubs for the game. People should check that piece out at The Athletic. It makes sense to me that you would hold a guy out of this game if you had intentions of calling him up between when the rosters are announced and the time that the game happens. Does this work the other way? Jared Kelenic's going to play in this game. Do we not see him again in Seattle until after the break as a result of his inclusion? Or Vidal Brujan, who's cooled off at AAA, do we not see him until sometime later in July as a result of his inclusion on these rosters?
Yeah, I had I had some questions about this. I brought up Duran, who was also on the Olympic qualifying team. So is he going to go to the Olympics? What if the Red Sox say, no, we don't want you to go to the Olympics. We want you to come to the big leagues. He did play in the Futures game 2 years ago, but he's a different player this year. He's also remade his swing. And so suddenly he's coming into quite a bit of power. I wonder if teams are looking at this, because it's not just the Futures game. The Futures game is part of All-Star Week, so there's this natural break in the season. Do you use that as sort of an inflection point? This is a good time to promote players. I remember, I swear, was it the Royals who promoted Will Myers? They hosted the Futures game, and they just promoted him out of there. The Blue Jays did it, I believe, with both Bo Bichette and Vlad Guerrero Jr., promoted them at they came to the Futures game, and they left the Futures game to a higher level than the one that they had left. So teams really view it as that kind of opportunity. I think it's a good one in a sense. Hey, you finished a half with the player, with your first team. Great. We're ready to have you take the next step. It almost feels like a good, well-timed reward for players who have produced. And I could see that happening with all the players you mentioned. I could see that. And, the Rays don't really have a spot for Brujan right now, so maybe that one doesn't particularly apply. But could we see Kelenic come back up? He's been much better in AAA. If he has a good showing, do the Mariners decide to give him another chance? Since it seemed like the whole point of the demotion was just to give him a breather and let him try to sort of reset mentally. Yeah, we could see a lot of these guys we could see a number of these guys in the majors, I think, even more so that we're going to see guys from the Futures game get bumped up. Maybe Adley Rutschman moves up to AAA. It doesn't seem like he's learning a whole lot in AA right now. He'd be another good candidate for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with Rutschman, easy to understand where the Orioles are coming from, not necessarily pushing him to the big leagues in the second half of the season, but at least give him the AAA test. That's in line with the Bobby Witt Jr. plan, I think, that you mentioned for the Royals as well.
Same draft. Actually, if all three of those guys got to the big leagues in September, we'd have 1, 2, 3 from that draft class.
Yeah,
from 2 years ago, all in the majors. That'd be pretty amazing. And the year before, I think, is the year where the top 7 have all already made it to the majors, and pick 8 didn't sign. So to me, that would be pretty impressive. You know, as much as people like to say, the baseball draft is a crapshoot. Not really. I mean, there's a lot of busts, obviously, because teams take risks. But we're getting pretty good at finding the right guys at the top of the draft, I think. I don't take any of the players, but it's just my opinion.
The early part of the first round may be getting a little bit easier to navigate because there's more information to work with than there ever has been before.
That's very true.
Let's talk about the College World Series for a moment, Keith. If you blinked, you easily could have missed it, but Mississippi State won the title. Kind of a weird lopsided series. Vandy blew them out in game one and then got blown out in games two and three. And one of the main stories here is that the final chapter of the Kumar Rocker story at Vandy really wasn't a happy one. It looked like Vanderbilt was in a great spot with Rocker taking the ball for that decisive game three.
Yeah, and I have, look, there have been rumors for a month that Kumar was falling in the draft. And it's just, you know, from the, I always thought inaccurate expectation that he was going to be the first overall pick in the draft. I just never bought into that. But that he was seen, okay, well, he's going to go, you know, 1, 2, 3. You know, now it's, could he go 7? Could he go 10, 11? I don't think he gets any farther than that, but that would be a fall. I think that would be accurate to say that. A fall from expectations. You know, people have said, well, why? And I'm talking even people in the industry, not just fans. You know, what's going on? I think a lot of people just don't trust Kumar on the mound. It is not a question of stuff. It's not a question of size. It's not a question of athleticism. But one, his stuff is fastball, especially kind of can play down. You grade out the pitches and they look like they're here and they actually play somewhere below that. And you saw that last night. It wasn't that, you know, he didn't walk a slew of guys, but he was, Mississippi State got good cuts off of premium stuff. And also I think that his approach to pitching, particularly when he's dealing with some on-field adversity is not there yet. Now, I could have said the same thing about Garrett Cole in his draft year, so I don't think this is necessarily the Kumar Rocker is terrible. He's not a prospect. Nobody should take this guy. I'm not saying that. But when you are picking first, second, third, and I still think the market for Rocker starts at 4 with Boston. There's some tiny chance that the Rangers could take him at 2. But the first spot I feel pretty good about him going would be Boston at 4. When you're up there, though, you are looking at fine distinctions between players. So if you look at Rocker and say, that's a college pitcher who still hasn't gotten over maybe the maturity hump in terms of how to deal with when things go wrong or when he makes what he thinks is a perfect pitch and the opposing hitter hits it. That is something that players have to get over in time. It is a part of growing up as a baseball player. Some guys are already there by age 21. Some guys are there at age 18. And some guys still aren't there at 25. It could be the little thing that just makes you look at Rocker and say, you know, we're just going to slot him just below this one other guy here. And before you know it, you've slotted him just below enough guys that, yeah, hey, maybe he does go 7th, which is the Royals. And then I think his floor is 10, 11. 10 is the Mets. 11 is the Nationals. One of those two teams will take him. And they'll pay him. They'll pay him over slot if they have to. I don't have that from the teams. That's just my belief, especially with the Mets' new owner. I can imagine Steve Cohen, if he's in the draft room or talking to their scouting director or their GM, you know, Kumar Rocker is there at 10, just pay him, right? We'll figure it out. I mean, he seems every bit to be that kind of owner. Do not worry about the money. If we think that guy was one of the 5 best players in the draft and he's there at 10, just take him.
Yeah, definitely seems like he can't really fall further than that range, but that's still a pretty big drop from where anybody would have placed them in the worst case scenario just 2 months ago. Interesting to me, though, Mississippi State, their first national title in any NCAA team sport.
Is that really true?
I can't believe that.
Men's or women's?
It's in the Mitch Sherman recap of I've been thinking back throughout my life. I've never seen Mississippi State win anything.
No.
Never. It just doesn't happen. Like they usually have a good baseball team, but not college football. They're never close.
That's a major SEC school, right? Haven't they all won a bunch of things? Maybe not. Maybe I need to start looking at some of the other ones, and I think I just assumed that big state university, like those in the South, have all won things.
At some point.
I mean, I'm showing my, you know, I'm a Northeast guy who went to a not great athletic school. So, although we won hockey in 1988, Yeah, I think it's 88 was when my alma mater. Yeah, we won hockey. We won the championship. Did you win the bean pot?
That's all they care about up there, right?
That's really true. Yeah, no, it's fucking Northeastern. They beat us again. Oh, my God.
Before we go, Mississippi State, prospect-wise, do they have anybody you see going early in this draft?
The guy who pitched last night, I'm assuming it's part of why you asked, too, Will Bednar. You know, he might have made himself a little money last night. I don't know that makes a huge difference because we knew what he was, right? The fact that he came, especially he was rocky in the first and then settled down and was just strike after that. It's good to see. He is a slider guy, and there's dispute on whether the slider is really plus or just above average. Again, those fine distinctions I'm talking about when you're trying to rank players in a draft room. He's a first rounder. There are enough teams that see the slider as a plus pitch and think he can be a starter that he's going somewhere in the first. I actually just noticed Jonathan Mayo over at MLB, he had Bednar going 11th to the Nationals. That is higher than I have personally heard Bednar going. It's not to say Jonathan's wrong. We hear different stuff. But I do feel very confident he's going somewhere in the first round. There are enough teams looking for college pitching that I think he's going to end up. And there are a lot of college pitchers who are hurt or just not 100%. I think that makes room for Bednar somewhere in the back half of the round. You can see Christian McLeod of Mississippi State. He's their sort of touch and feel guy. He was the Friday starter for a lot of the year. He probably goes somewhere in the top five rounds. They had a guy, Tarantola. I believe it's Eric Tarantola. C-E-R-A-N-T-O-L-A. Might be spelling it wrong. I shouldn't be because that makes him Italian, which means he is one of my people. He has first round stuff and he couldn't find the plate. They had to take him out of the rotation. He did not even pitch a whole lot this year. I wonder if someone just takes a shot and says, that's a golden arm. If you're willing to sign for $100,000, we'll figure it out. You know, he could be Jason Nabergall all over again. If you don't remember that name, look him up on Baseball Reference. Make sure you're sitting down before you look at the stats. But I there are enough teams now with their own essentially pitching labs that it's, hey, you got arm strength like that and you can spin it and he can do things with the baseball. You just can't find the plate. You know what? We'll take a guy like that and we'll see if we can work with you. It's the worst that happens. It's, you know, he's not going in the top five rounds. Could he be someone's eighth round pick? Could he be someone's 11th round pick outside the bonus pool where you say, we got a little money left over. We'll take a shot at you. I think that's probably what he is.
Yeah, that's a nice group of players then that you could be looking at at various points in the draft from that championship-winning Mississippi State team. So shout out to their fans. Sounded like they did a good job traveling to Omaha to support their squad in that series. That is going to wrap things up for this episode of The Athletic Baseball Show. Before we go, I'll let you know that the latest episode of The Keith Law Show was probably the most unique episode yet. It was about the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum theft. It was an interview that Keith did with Stephen Kirkchin. Stephen Kirkchin is related to Tim Kirkchin, of course, and he is an investigative reporter who has done extensive work with this story, which I highly recommend you check that out. I had never heard anything about this theft before we recorded the episode, so it kind of blew my mind.
So I went and listened to the podcast that Stephen produced. He appears on it as a guest. He's not one of the hosts, called Last Seen, S-E-E-N, from WBUR. It's a 9-part podcast that's all about the same story. It's awesome. It's actually even better than the Netflix documentary because there's just more. They just got more detail. A couple of different people talked. They even mentioned a completely different suspect who never appeared in the TV series. I've been driving around a lot lately and I was completely hooked. It was one of those, like, I need to get back in the car so I can keep listening to this podcast, right? Those are the best ones.
Yeah.
So yes, I meant to mention that at some point because you and I talked about it off air after I talked to Steven. Yeah, the Last Seen podcast. I know you might have a long drive ahead of you soon. I recommend it.
I do. I've got a lot of driving ahead of me this summer, so I need lots of things to listen to. If you're enjoying this show on a platform that allows you to rate and review it, take a moment to do that. If you got a friend who'd enjoy it, let them know. We're still new. We appreciate everybody who's jumped on board since this show launched a few months ago. On Twitter, he's at Keith Law. I am at Derek Van Riper. The Athletic Baseball Show is back on Monday. Have a great weekend.